The ongoing Iranian-Iraq conflict could spread further and further endanger the Persian Gulf region and lead even to a cutoff of the oil lifeline to Western Europe, Japan, and the Western Hemisphere. Jordan, Syria, possibly Libya, and North Korea have now cut themselves in on the fighting. And yet the Carter administration seems to be following, not setting, the pace of events in dealing with this conflict. I urge the President to convene a summit meeting of the Western European allies, Japan, and ourselves to concert policy and to initiate contingency planning in the event the Soviet Union uses the Persian Gulf War as a cover to intervene militarily in Poland.
This is your second visit to the Forward. The first one you may have forgotten. It was in 1946 in the summer when I was a political reporter and Alex Rose made an appointment and sent you down to East Broadway. And mine was the first full-length article that ever appeared about you when you were running for Congress. As a matter of fact, I still have the thank you letter that you wrote after being elected to the House. The first time. Our support for you was not constant. There were occasions when we were not endorsing you as a candidate, but we were generally proud of your achievements and of your record. And now I understand that you have something that you would like to talk to our leadership in these days. Both the lay leadership and the professional leadership of the Forward, and then we will have an exchange perhaps of questions and answers.
Well, I would like your support, and I'll answer for you the questions which are the questions which have been asked of me constantly about this campaign. You're well aware of the auspices under which I came into it. I said last February, and that's, I meant it, I have no reservations about it, that because of the assets with which the people of New York had equipped me, a quarter of a century in the Senate, unequaled by any other senator in the state's history, that I didn't feel that at a time of grave crisis like this, that I could walk away from the job without giving the people an opportunity to continue me because I had so much to give them right now. And you're very sophisticated people. You understand what it means in the Senate to have served with real credit for so long. I have the seniority. I have the committee places. Indeed, from your point of view, I'm the most critical committee of all, the Foreign Relations Committee. I stand at the head of my party, the ranking member, and I carry real weight there. You know, when you look around you in the world, you realize how badly it's needed. And at this time, I'm not going to live forever. Nobody knows that better than I. And but I felt the capacity to serve again, and I had thought I would retire. Dreamed of the fact that I would run again. But I really couldn't say no. I could only say yes. It was almost physical. That's why I'm so relaxed about this whole thing. Because I can't lose. In short, if the people wish me to continue, I feel the zest for the job, and I certainly understand the job, and my colleagues to an effectiveness. I'm number one in this or that. I stand well with my colleagues. If I'm reelected, I retain all my places. That's the tradition of the Senate. I realize that I'm not the ticket of a minority party, and I'd be much better off if I had gotten the Republican nomination. But it's a very difficult season for people like me who are liberal in their views in my party, which is very conservative today, more so than ever. For you, forward, I don't see that the Liberal Party makes any problem at all. And all for Jewish people who have no hang-ups about voting on that line. But for others, it does. And it gives my candidacy a longer odds than it should have, considering the fact that I'm as well known in this state, if not better, than the President of the United States. And everybody knows about me, my record, what I've done, what I can do, my personality, no hidden tricks. I believe that I deserve your endorsement on merit, because I can deliver on the things that interest you forward. And I have done it, whether it's higher education or elementary and secondary education, or health, or housing, or aid to New York City. I've taken a very leading position and had great measures of success. I think that's about all that I would need to say from myself, and I'd be very happy to answer your question.
I'll have the first question directed at you by the president of the former association, Mr. Dressler.
Senator, I wanted to know that you are on friendly territory.
Oh, I know.
So this discussion should be a frank discussion. And if anything you feel that should not be publicized, the beaver is near to your vision. As for myself, I wanted to know that I actively participated in your first campaign in 1946, together with Charlie Zimmerman. That evening, prior to the elections, I slept in a hotel on 72nd Street in order to get up in the morning to canvass the whole day long.
Wow.
And we were very happy when you were elected. This doesn't mean that we supported you in subsequent elections. Some yes and some no. But I wanted to know that at the beginning, we were very much enthusiastic. And you remember who was defeated. I suppose you remember Charlie Zimmerman?
Yeah, I remember Sasha.
Sasha. I was his assistant. And I come from the IRP. Now, we have...
Hello.
We have this problem with the senatorial election. If you would be the candidate and Holtzman, I can say for the board, there would be no hesitation. It would be Jacob K. Jeffries. But there is a hitch. Now, why? If it is D'Amato and Holtzman, we cannot take D'Amato. That's out of the question. And this, I believe I am not going to discuss it here. It is out of the question that we should, in the slightest, lean for a moment. It would has to be Holtzman. This is how sharp the line is. But now we have three. The question is, what are the chances for
Senator Javits to get the majority in the state. That's the primary question.
Plurality.
Plurality, not a plurality.
And no one will get it.
No. The Liberal Party is no factor here. We did not support the Liberal Party in recent years, as you probably know. The IMGW withdrew from the Liberal Party. We're not a part of it. And the Forward...
we also withdrew.
And the Forward, too, did not support the Liberal Party in recent years, as we did in the first formative years. But it is not going... We will find the name. The question is, will the millions find the name of Jack Jarvis on the ballot and give him enough votes to be again the senator for the next 6 years? God willing. This is the problem that
or is taking place. Or would that split? That's what you're asking.
I'm implying whether this will not facilitate the matter to be elected. This is the greater danger. We are interested in two phases in the government. First, social and labor legislation. And secondly, foreign policy. On both issues, we deserve our support. Question is, I pointed out, I tried to make it as sharp as possible for you to be able to respond on this.
Sure. My own judgment is the following, that the polls, I think, in this particular case, is the only guide we really have. And unfortunately, for all our points of view, the polls will be late developing. In short, you really won't know what the polls indicate until probably sometime next week, middle end. And the reason is this. My own campaign, because I was so surprised by the Republican result, didn't really get started until really a week ago Monday, from the point of view of election and with respect to the Liberal Party. And I have been, we're now on the air, radio and television, but we're slow getting on the air, and that's an important point, really to remind people that I'm running, that I'm in the race. And the polls have improved. They have not yet improved as much as I believe they will. Assuming that they do, and I believe they will, we've seen now already a phenomenon which is a very interesting one, and that is a reduction in Ms. Holzman's strength.
Yesterday's poll.
She didn't look all that good. So she could perhaps be beaten even without me, which would be, you know, would be even worse if there was no likelihood of my winning if she can't. My reason for remaining in the race is that I don't think anybody is solemn. I think you have to proceed on the basis of your best judgment. You can't be a chucham. You know what I mean? If I were, you know, a bad third or something, I would be the first to tell you to get it. You know, whether I get 18% or 4%, doesn't matter. But it doesn't look that way. It looks like the fact that the people do have a resort to me, they're sure about that. In short, whatever may be Ms. Holzman's advantages as a new personality, and whatever may be D'Amato's disadvantages as an ultra-conservative, I'm there. if I withdraw, I'm not there anymore. So the people have a very real choice. They can always go to me. They're sure of that. I believe that's the way it's likely to go. I think we will see that within a week. And therefore, I felt that it was proper for me to talk to you about your endorsement. I'm not Solomon either, any more than you are. There's a risk involved. I agree with you. There is a risk involved. But there's also a benefit involved in my staying in the race. And that is that I am a very acceptable choice in a situation where, frankly, if you want my own view, and I'll be very honest with you, I'm a little surprised at what surfaced about Elizabeth. I knew she was stiff and not easy to get along with. And that also she is not too understanding of the fact that because something has deficiencies, it's unwise to wreck it. And she's done that she tried to do it, but I wouldn't let her, with this summer feeding program in New York. It was characteristic of her outlook. She'll learn. She'll be much better 5 years from now than she is now, no matter what she does. But in the meantime, I think she, too, has turned up some serious disadvantages. You can't get help for Israel, and not vote for U.S. Defense Authorization. This can't be done. Now, it's all right if she's, one of 400 votes, but it's very different when you're the leader. And we'll have no leader. Stone's gone, and I'm gone, and Ribbikoff's gone. Forget it. You will not have a leader in the Senate or in the House of any size for a minimum of 6 years. And it's a very, very a very dangerous period for Israel. Very dangerous. I should quit. If I knew it was as tough as this, I would. I need it like a big fat hole in the head. It's no job for me for money. I never used it for that, and I never would. And it's no job for me for honor. I've got plenty of honor, all the honor anybody's entitled to. So what am I killing myself for? Only because, as I told you, I can't say no to this call I cannot deny. And so all I can tell you with all sincerity is you got to take a chance like I'm taking a chance. Do you think I want to be defeated badly? Why should I be? I don't deserve it. So we're all going to run a risk. And we'll have to make the best choice we can. We're only mortal. That's all I can tell you. But I feel it my duty to come to the forward like I would feel it my duty to run. Uniquely. Because you are uniquely in my
stream, in my mainstream.
But what you do, believe me, I'll never be angry with you. Whatever you do. But your conscience has got to be as restful as mine.
Okay. Mr. Senator,
please.
The Vice President of the Public Association, Will Stern.
Senator. Although the foreign is no longer identified with the Liberal Party, I am. I'm not very active, but I've been active. And, I disagree with the position of Liberal Party on Anderson, and I said so at the state convention. I also would like you to know that we wrote many letters to you when I was the executive director of the Workers' Circle. I retired about a little over a year ago, and we always got
excellent service
and responses from you, so we appreciate you very much. One thing that has come up in the campaign, which is very important to us, is the matter of foreign policy.
And I don't just mean Israel.
The role that the United States plays in the world, particularly vis-a-vis Russia, is a critical thing, because we can get ourselves into an awful situation after a few blunders. And Elizabeth Holtzman is now taking the position that the only time she voted against defense appropriations for stronger defense is when it was a matter of
eliminating waste.
Which isn't so. Which just myself, but that's what you're saying. Could you clarify for us what your difference is with her in this area of foreign policy and strong defense?
In the final analysis, I have always voted for defense authorizations and defense appropriations because you can't run a railroad by stopping it. And I have used my advocacy and such influence as I had in two things. One, in the strategic dispositions of the United States, and second, in the individual weapons systems, especially when they are expensive. And I have taken very solemnly to heart the admonition of the Constitution that it is we civilians who have to run the military, not the other way around. So I have voted, used my own judgment, I've undoubtedly made mistakes, in weaponry. For example, what Mr. D'Amato constantly indicts against me is that I voted against the B-1, and I say it's a turkey. It is. I mean, when I voted against it, it couldn't fly low, and it could not pierce enemy defenses. And the cruise missile was a much more effective weapon, which was coming along right on its heels. And the final proof, if you needed any, was that in the last budget, only a few months ago, when we voted a bomber, we voted one of three types, either a B-1 type, or what they call the new technology, or an FB-111, which we have. All you have to do is stretch them. You know, it's, it takes a relatively minor modification, which justified my attitude. Now, as to the overall strategy, I believe that the United States is long overdue in a rapid deployment force, because that's our global responsibility. But I believe that our allies are also long overdue in being a part of that rapid deployment. And I have been very active in the affairs of NATO for years. I've been chairman of this committee and that committee, and one year I headed the review committee of NATO, the so-called Committee of Nine, which still, to this day, it's only 5 years old, has the classic NATO report outstanding. And I believe very deeply in our alliances and that our network of defense has got to be based on alliance. And I would be much more, I think, effective if I were president with our allies than our presidents have been, because our presidents are scared to death of having a showdown with our allies. I don't believe that's wise. You gotta have a showdown. I mean, there's gotta be an answer someday, yes or no. And of course, I believe in harmonizing the economic policy of the United States, vis-a-vis especially the Soviet Union and its satellites. That's the big deficiency. See, we have sanctions against the Soviet Union and Afghanistan, which our allies pay no attention to. But if you boycott the commercial loans, Soviet Union and its satellites, you watch them come to heel. That's where it hurts. So, you know, there's a lot of problems with our situation. And I have done my utmost to repair. And I'm a thorough believer in salt. And I think it's a great mistake to junk salt too. And I would renegotiate it because I don't think you can get it ratified now. Though I voted affirmatively to vote it out of committee and to send it to the floor, but the president and the leader of the Senate, Byrd of West Virginia, really took it off the calendar, which at the time I can understand, but it was a grave reverse. Now we have to go back to the drawing board on the salt process, but I certainly wouldn't junk the treaty. I'd renegotiate it and make the Russians an offer to renegotiate. And that's about my stance in defense policy. I think it's...
But what is Holtzman's...
Holtzman, I believe, I mean, you must ask her. I believe. Gleaned from the debates.
From her record.
From her record and the debates. I think she must have some ideological problem with voting defense appropriations. I think there must be something in this girl. You know, after all, I'm twice her age, so I can speak to her. There must be something in her
that
makes it congenitally impossible for her
to buy arms. Now, there is another man
like that in the Senate
of great eminence, and he was none other than Mike Mansfield. It broke his heart
to have to buy arms. He's the fellow who invented the idea of making Berlin an open city, which I defeated him, and I'm delighted I did. But this is a congenital thing. Mark Hatfield feels the same way. And these are very intelligent, able people. Now, they don't quote the way Elizabeth does, but they feel that way. So I can understand her. It's absolutely, just like I couldn't say no to running again, she can't say yes to arms appropriation. It just won't let her.
That's the best I can tell you.
Because the pattern of her thinking, you know, it's not monolithic. If she
excuses herself, you know, she voted for the budget.
Or something like that. She's struggling. But right now, it's not timely. You can't struggle.
Senator, you have to take a few more questions.
That's right.
Mr. Ostroff, the manager and business manager.
I really don't have a question. I think the issues have been going well. I think the significance of what Pastor mentioned before is most probably the biggest decision we've
ever had
to
make. Tipping point. I agree with you.
It's an interesting one because historically, and even the question about the chances that you have.
Well, I'm not as old as.
Oh, I'm older than
anybody. Oh, yeah.
I can remember way back in my young days when the Forward chose to support candidates who, I guess in their own way, knew would never be elected, but they would push in principle.
Sure.
Our problem is one. It's interesting because we very seldom supported a Republican candidate.
With very rare exceptions, you were one of the distinguished exceptions. It's interesting to hear that. Best
I say that the problem is that you're not running on a Republican.
Well,
because then it would be a, you know,
sure.
A real...
it would be easy.
There would be no problem
at all for us.
I think what you have said before is probably the greatest thing for us to consider, and that's our own conscience.
That's right.
I don't think there's anyone in this room who would deny the fact that you have earned anybody's support, as far as representing New York, representing us as Americans, and representing us as Jews. And, you know, in whatever order one wants to put it,
it's relatively unimportant.
Logistically, as you know, we were going to make a recommendation to our association last week. And I'm extremely thankful, first of all, that you called and we delayed it.
And best I said, we will be making our decision next Thursday. We have already supported and come out to support the President Carter. And the Liberal Party situation is something, while it's a little bit of a problem and a problem ideologically with us, because some of us have felt
very strongly about the Liberal Party and some of the things they've done, which we didn't agree with. I hope our conscious decision is the right one.
I hope
and,
so. However you decide.
Appreciate your taking the time and spending it with us.
Mr. Mlodek.
My question was asked by the President, and I'm satisfied with your answer.
Thank you. Mr. Petrushka, one of our oldest members.
By the way, we did support a very famous Republican, 1924, as a third party candidate for Holland.
Really?
It was an outstanding fight at that time.
He really?
Maurice Hilton, he was fighting for him.
Yeah.
I remember the famous debate in the Madison Square Garden. Hilton to Holland, and the president, the chairman of the gathering, was saying across the table.
It was Clarence Darwin about the League of Nations, and it was Hilton that defended the League of Nations in that time. But I want to bring out this at one point. You are Robin Hood, as far as your record is very distinguished. My question is, the night when you decided to be in the fight, why didn't you select an outstanding and distinguished committee
in order to put you on another ballot and another line?
Yeah. I'll tell you what happened.
What was the reason? Because it came too late.
Came too late, right. I'll tell you what happened. I had inventory the fact of getting on an independent line 6 weeks before the primary election. And I had a strategy meeting. I wasn't there, but because I wanted to leave that to my political people. Including the Republican leaders who supported me in the primary campaign. And the unanimous decision was not to seek an independent line because it would make the Republicans feel
that I didn't have any confidence in their franchise. So, I mean,
common judgment, not mine, but theirs, but I adopted it, so it's mine, was not to seek it then and there.
And then when the axe fell, our time was much too brief. We just couldn't physically do it. And I'm not a one to throw in 20,000 signatures, half of which I know to be improper. I just can't do that. We had, we finally ended up with about 18,000. We could have pushed it over, but it would have been a completely invalid petition. So, I simply must confess an error of judgment on my part, not theirs. They advised me, and I accepted.
Our youngest is member, the editor of the English section, which we now publish every Sunday, Kenneth Lippel.
The youngest member, I'd like to ask a question about our older citizens in New York. What do you think that you could do for New York's Jewish senior citizens that Elizabeth Olsen couldn't?
I think what I can do the best is get them attention and appropriations which they need in the Medicaid and Medicare field. I'm one of the authors of both Medicaid and Medicare. In also the promotion of health maintenance organizations, which until the National Health Plan can get through,
is the best recourse which they had, and also to protect their private pensions, because Social Security is inadequate, and the private pension system must grow. And I am the author, as you undoubtedly know,
of ERISA, the private, and just saved 8 million pensions by passing a law which dealt with a very strange economic phenomenon. We have 8 million members of pension plans for multi-employer plans, like in the building trade, where you have more than one employer. Many of those in the recent recession had to withdraw from plans because they couldn't afford to maintain them. It resulted in contracting the universe so much that the rest would have had to go busted and the plans closed because the rest of them couldn't put up all that money for those retirees. So by a very complicated financial arrangement, we're getting a little here and a little there and a little the other place. We just passed a law which continued those plans effectively. And that was,
fantastic for 8 million people. The reason I give you the numbers is because they're enormous. And, we have 30 million people under those plans. So I believe that those plans
have to be very materially improved. Also, I have been one of the principal factors in the anti-poverty program, which has given
community organizations money like Bedford-Stuyvesant,
which I founded with Robert Kennedy and John Lindsay. And generally speaking, I'm held in the very highest esteem by our older citizens. Now, when you use the word about Ms. Holzman, which I think is the proper one, not what she wants to give them, what can she give them? And there I'm on very solid ground. I can give them a great deal more because I can deliver a great deal more. For years I was the ranking member of the Committee on Labor and Human Resources. I'm still the senior. I'm still on that committee. And that's where the delivery has to take.